the Antiwhite system and tune in to the Pearl White system at radioarian.com.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 27th of June, 2018. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. As it's Wednesday, we are welcoming back Eddie Morrison. Eddie, how are you doing today?
Oh, not too bad. Still alive. And okay, really. Nice sunny weather. I don't know what it's like for you.
Yeah, absolutely beautiful. Well, we did miss you. We did miss you last week. Obviously, regular listeners will know we've been going through 50 years of nationalism, but we did have Liam Kernahan on, and he actually expanded a bit more on what you'd been talking about with the Antifa and the gangsters that are involved in it. So that was good anyway. Yeah. That was good to just get some more background info. But today we're going to be looking at the formation of the British National Party, I believe.
Yeah, if I just want to say one thing on that last, just going back a bit, that Jewish gangster thing. The name of that rent racketeer was Rackman, in case anybody was wondering from a previous chat.
I thought it was. I remembered it afterwards. It's, you know, these things, you know them in the back of your mind, but you just suddenly forget them when you're recording.
A very nasty character.
Let's go into the BNP then. Let's go straight into the BNP and the formation of that, because obviously it existed before Nick Griffin, but that's who most people think of when they think of the BNP.
Unfortunately, yeah. The BNP came into existence around 1982-83. In 81-82, John Tyndall, of course, was the National Front, and there was quite a fallout in the National Front, mainly over the proclivities of some leading members that JT didn't find agreeable. So, and of course, it was still recovering from the shocks of 1979-80. So John Tyndall left the NF and formed the new National Front. That was in 81, I think. Yeah. Another publication was called New Frontier. And it went on for about a year, New National. I actually joined it. I couldn't stay in the movement without JT being in it. And within about a year, we had a conference in London. And we knew the name was not so good, you know, sounded like a washing powder. And we sort of voted on various names, and mainly people from North put forward British National Party. Now, there'd been one previously in the 1960s under John Bean. I think there was one prior to that, actually, sometime in the 30s. And the new National Front adopted the name British National Party. So the British National Party was founded in 82, which 83 at a push, which is what, 17 years before Griffin put his hoof into it.
Yeah, I think there was an earlier one. I remember Peter Rushton writing about it in Heritage and Destiny, a very early BNP. I mean, maybe we should expand a bit more on John Tyndall and how important he was for the movement, because the BNP was his baby, really, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. John Tyndall, when the movement was formed, I think we've been talked about this before, but when the movement was formed very quickly, JT was not allowed into the NF. He had to do a year's probation, which we all thought was silly, but as he had a certain National Socialist past, which, quite frankly, he shouldn't be ashamed of, and he wasn't, but it was insisted upon. But he brought his people into the Great Britain movement, and they were actually the head office officer corps, really. They run just about everything. Over the course of the 70s, there were splits as the populists took over. Mr. Griffin was sort of emerging. into the YNF. But a lot of it blew up because John wanted, he knew the National Front could continue with a inflated directorate, factions all over the place. So he basically put his foot down and says, Andy, give me the power to run this as chairman of the National Front without all the pot shots and schisms and factions. And it wasn't given to him. So he walked away. And that's 82 and from the NNF. And you think he should have perhaps stayed in there, but I don't think so. I mean, from then on in 1982, the National Front, he's had a few hiccups and made a few marches and what have you, but he's no way, I mean, I'm saying this as a National Front member today, by the way, but no way the National Front today is in any way compared to the NF of the 70s and early 80s. Sad to say.
Yeah, the BNP took it over, didn't they? The BNP really sort of took over as the nationalist party that was in the public's eye, but that didn't really occur, I don't think, till about the millennium. Oh, earlier than that.
89, yeah, when we had the Dewsbury open public meeting. We staged three open air meetings in 89, Darlington, Dewsbury and Bradford, and we got so much publicity, that's when the BNP became known throughout the media throughout the world, you know, the BNP then. We sort of limped along up to 89, but in 89, and again, Griffin wasn't in the BNP, and in 1994 or 5, was it? Griffin's still not in the BNP, nobody wanted him in. Derek Beacon became the first elected nationalist councillor when he took the island, was it Tower Hamlets? And the ballyhoo there was incredible. You think we'd actually got in government electing one person. But again, that was done without Nick Griffin's attendance. Griffin ran, and he came into it about 97, 98. I don't know if people want to hear about it. It was pretty sly how he did it. A lot of us opposed it, Griffin coming in. We've seen the damage he'd done to the National Front. But John Zindel was pretty forgiving bloke, and He took Nick Griffin on as editor of Spearhead. You've got to imagine, John was, you know, no young man, but he was trying to lead a movement which was growing quite rapidly and still get a monthly magazine out, which was Spearhead. So he offered, as a paid thing, Griffin to edit Spearhead, which he did. He didn't do a bad job, actually. But he'd let the wolf in among the sheep, basically. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. I'm just thinking about back to Derek Beacon getting elected in Tower Hamlets. Of course, Tower Hamlets now, I mean, it's just black and brown and accusations of vote fraud. And was that done in a deliberate response to Derek Beacon getting elected? Did they move lots of brown people in
electorate? It was happening anyway. There's a reason why Derek did get elected. It was a last stand of the whites, basically, voting for Derek.
So that was why you got elected in, is because that was in the process of happening.
Oh, it's a red hot race issue, his election, yeah.
And once Nick Griffin got in, didn't he oust John Tyndall or kick him out from the party?
Oh, yeah. Well, going back, he became editor of Spearhead, and a few of us shook our heads, but I understood what John was. I mean, he was carrying a real workload, getting out a 28-page magazine every month, and believe it, I've tried my best to do things like that, but it's a heck of a task each month to do, and he never missed an issue. He handed it over to Griffin, who, you know, give him his due, is intelligent enough to put some good articles together, but giving him a paid position was a mistake as well. But John was a pretty honest sort of open bloke. He believed in backstabbing, and all the time Griffin was in, he started to intrigue until 1999, when himself, Tony Lacomba, not a very nice person either, and a few others were in the Griffin circle, he won the election for chairman in 1999-2000. There's an election for chairman because Griffin threw his cap in the ring and says, I want to be chairman. And none of us thought that he'd actually do it, but he was. He was elected with quite a big majority. I think mainly because he came over to a lot of people who never knew Griffin who joined in the 90s. So he had a pretty wide open audience there. We were trying to warn him, you know, for God's sake, don't get him as chairman. But unfortunately, he became chairman end of 99, 2000. He very swiftly suspended John Tyndall from membership, which became an expulsion. As it became then, it became a prescription. And he put all his own sort of people in. And these were all people you might call populists. Their platform was very a bit anti-Nazi. They sort of portrayed themselves as anti-Nazi, very much as some of the groups are doing today. Britain First, and there was that other one of that woman and Tommy
Robinson was in the EDL, Jada Franson, and Paul Golding. They were Britain First, and Anne-Marie Waters. She was involved in Pegida before she was doing what she's doing now, alongside Tommy Robinson. But they're all anti-Nazi, aren't they? They all talk about how they're anti-fascist and anti-Nazi, and you know, the Antifa are the real fascists and the real Nazis, according to them. But yeah, it's just infantile, I think, to call each other names. They should just concentrate on being positive and talking about the issues, and not alienate people that are on their side. Just because, you know, they're a little bit further to the right than them. It's ridiculous, I think. We need to have a united front if we're going to get anywhere, not fighting amongst
ourselves. These were the sort of people that Griffin was attracting in 2000, 2001. And I was suspended and expelled in 2000 for... Can I give a state why I was expelled? It's quite amusing.
Yeah.
I was expelled for being an unreconstructed National Socialist. What did they make me with? But Lego bricks. I didn't go to this silly tribunal. I just sent my card in and says good luck. But John Tyndall, actually, is very important. That John Tyndall didn't want to leave the BNP. He wanted to try and take it back. And I said, John, you know, you form a new movement now. Half of the BNP will come in with you, all the veterans, the old guard, and the experienced ones. Says they won't put up with Griffin, but he didn't. He was determined that his movement had been taken off him. And by that time, people were awakening a bit to what Griffin was doing. But, of course, he was waiting on a court decision, basically, about getting elected back to the BNP. But unfortunately, in 2005, he passed away.
Very, very sad. I'm just thinking there about, you know, you were saying, well, Griffin was a populist and he moved all these populists in. Well, we can see that because Tommy Robinson was a member of the BNP. Paul Golding was a member of the BNP. Was Paul Weston, was he a member of the BNP at one time?
Who was that, sorry?
Paul Weston, who's, I think he was in Liberty GB.
I think he was a member, yeah.
So you've got all these people they're leading the populist civic nationalist movement now, but there was a time when they were in the BNP. And I can remember Paul Hickman saying, and he was standing for election with the BNP. He had his, his address published and, you know, he took a lot of flack for that. And I can remember him saying that he left the BNP when he was told that he couldn't put the Celtic cross flag up. He was told that was a racist symbol. Banned from using the Celtic cross.
Sorry, Sven, just to back you up on what you're saying there, I saw as the millennium turned, what we might call, white nationalist members as opposed to populists getting thrown out of BNP meetings when they'd been founder members of the BNP. I remember at one meeting in Rochdale when Simon Shepherd was evicted. People might know Simon Shepherd from Heretical Press, and Simon had some Holocaust denial literature on him. They actually confiscated it off of Simon and ripped it up in the middle of the meeting. And I thought, my God, what has it come to this? And all of us walked out. But just as an example of how extreme they were going, they were more interested in attacking the so-called brackets Nazis than the Reds were, quite frankly, you know. But it proves their undoing. And I knew from past experience, everybody tries this populist route to power, drop everything you believe in. When do you stop chipping away at your fundamental beliefs, then? Because eventually, you might get a few people elected, but you're no longer a white nationalist. So what's the point?
Yeah, you're no longer securing a future for white children. You become a part of the establishment. I mean, we've seen it happen with other parties. I think it was the Swedish Democrats or the one Swedish party they started out quite ethno-nationalist and just completely watered everything down until they were pretty much the same as UKIP. And then there was a big, it did seem like the BNP were having lots of success. They were going to have a massive success. A lot of people were really looking forward to Griffin taking the party off. And they had two, MEPs, didn't they? Nick Griffin and Andrew Bronze. And they got all the money from the European Union and it just fizzled out completely.
I think that would be a subject for a whole discussion. What happened to it? I mean, I was on the outside. I was leading the Spearhead group, which was trying to get JT back into things. Plus, we'd formed the White Nationalist Party as well, but that's another story for another program, maybe. But lost my thread there. So what was that about? Sorry.
Well, I was just asking what happened because get lots of people elected.
It was incredible. I mean, they became a majority on Stoke Council. They had a big majority on Burnley Council. And I was you just thought, wow. I mean, the fact that I wasn't in the BNP, I was still admiring the fact that they were getting people elected. And I kept thinking, maybe Griffin, he stuck to his original, because Griffin was a white nationalist, or so he said, prior to 2000. But you've got to wonder now, looking at what Griffin's doing today. I mean, he was expelled from the BNP, as we know. The BNP is just basically a hollow shell with a few people keeping the name going. And, Griffin is now in the European Knights or something, Sven. Have you heard about this?
Yeah, it doesn't really seem to be doing very much. But there was a young rising star of the BNP was Mark Cullett, and I think they got rid of him as well. And I mean, he was very promising, and today he does some wonderful stuff. He has a massive following, really good guy. So, what happened? Why didn't Mark Cullett become leader? That's a question I'd like answering. Why didn't they invest in Mark and... what happened there?
Well, I recruited Mark into the NF, actually. Very quickly about Mark. I bought his book, by the way, if you ever listened into these broadcasts.
Yeah, it's a very good book. I recommend it.
And, his book is good. He joined the NF. He was at Leeds University, and he wanted a free speech society, and he turned to the NF, invited us up to the campus. Of course, it all went haywire. Such a spotlight went on Mark Cullett. But as to why, he became very much Griffin's man then. But I can't speak for Mark. I mean, he's not but I mean, yeah, I'm all right with Mark, no problems. But he was led up the garden path as well. Whether he should have become leader or not, I don't know. He didn't. Among others that challenged Johnson, Andrew Bronze probably would have been the best person to displace Griffin. But what I was trying to say is, you've got to wonder what this man Griffin is made up of. Why does he do these things? Why build a party from a small grouping in the 90s, or a very small party, into something that was really possibly going to challenge the status quo in this country, and then cut its throat, movement basically? It was just incredible.
Maybe he just made bad decisions. Maybe, maybe he's genuine at heart and he wants to do the right thing, but he just makes the wrong decisions, makes promises that he can't keep, tries to please too many people all of the time and ends up pleasing nobody. A lot of people do say he's genuine, and I hear some bad things from you, I hear good things from other people. It's hard to make your mind
I think
up.
You're being very kind there to him, Sven. Honestly, he is. I'm looking at it from my point of view. John Tyndall loved the BNP, and the way... if Griffin had won chairmanship and then kept John Tyndall on as well, but it was the savagery that the Tyndallites in the BNP were attacked, with Griffin leading it and Lacombe and others following him. It was like a... as I said, they turned on all Tyndall supporters. If it had been a decent bloke, this is my argument, if Griffin had been a decent bloke, he would have took the leadership, right, it was a fair and democratic election, and he would have kept John Tyndall in because Spearhead was a good magazine. He prohibited Spearhead from being sold at any meetings from 2001. So as to whether he's a nice guy and not, I do honestly think, Sven, that Nick Griffin knows what he is, quite frankly.
Well, he was, you know, he's definitely putting himself in a position that holds a lot of risk. I mean, you have to be courageous to put your face out there as being the, you know, the focal point for the BNP. He took a lot of risks. You know, the man did have courage, took a lot of attacks from the Antifa, but it's very, very strange that as soon as he got in, he got rid of the founder of the party that he's in. Mm-hmm. He banned the magazine, which was the way that he actually got in the party in the first place, and got rid of, you know, really, really well-respected, highly thought-of people like Simon Shepherd, like yourself, Peter Rushton. I think he got rid of him as well. Yeah.
There's Richard
Edmonds. Cool. Derek Beacon was the guy that got elected. What did he get rid of him for?
It was a bit Stalinist in a way. You read of these purges in the 30s that Stalin had when his way of expelling was to shoot them. But basically, Stalin got rid of all the old guard. I mean, they were shot or died in camps. But Griffin did that, but not on an extreme. So. Having a shot, but he basically had purge after purge after purge, and I thought perhaps right, he's got rid of all the Tyndallites. We're at that point and we're considering a new movement anyway. But he then started purging the people who'd come in because he were a leader, if you know what I mean. People who'd been attracted by populism, there were more fallouts going on. So I don't know, as I say, he was brave and it takes him doing stand up as a leader of a party like the BNP, but there were plenty of others that stood up for it, Sven. But and then going back to that Tonight Show he was on tonight, or
Question Time.
He absolutely, number one, made a complete fool of himself, and number two, wasn't very good for the BNP the way he came over. But again, I suppose you could get a bit. The trouble is, you say I'd rather not talk about Griffin or slag him off or whatever. But the trouble is, from 2001 to 2009 or 10, Griffin was the BNP. Very difficult not to talk about him.
Yeah, he was the face of the BNP, the most well-known nationalist in Britain. I think one thing that we can take from this is that, you know, if you split off into lots of factions, then the movement's going to fall apart because you had a rising movement there, but then it was, well, we must get rid of the ethno-nationalists and then we must be populist. We must change direction and then we must get rid of the populists and then we must get rid of the revisionists and the Holocaust deniers and we must have
Jewish members and we must have non-white members which they had,
multicultural, and then the whole thing falls apart, which is what's happened.
What I
read about now, I read that the BNP is just going because they're wanting to cash in on people that left their wills to John Tyndall's BNP, expecting, you know, the money to go towards this big movement. And it just looks now as if that's the only reason why the party is still going, so that they can cash in on these wills. That's what I've read about it anyway.
Well, I think you're on the ball there. It's exactly what they're going. I mean, the talk among nationalists is about the BNP. It's just a pension fund edge thing, just waiting for the next poor guy to die and he's left the money to him. I would think, hopefully, anybody who's left the pension, left money in their wills to the BNP today, and they're still kicking them out, they should change the wills immediately. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's a bit sordid, really, what they're doing.
We should also point out that Nick Griffin isn't involved in that. That's the current leadership of the BNP that are doing that. Yeah, we should make that clear.
Yeah, yeah. I have sat with Andrew Bronz recently, and obviously he knew Griffin a long time as I did, and the Griffin of the 80s and the early, the mid-90s was quite a likeable bloke. Possibly he may still be if you left politics out of it. But this complete turnaround that he produced on himself was, I can't explain why he did it. You know, did he really believe in a populist ideology? It was only a few years before he was running a magazine called The Rune and carrying articles in praise of the Waffen-SS. Difficult to believe he had that turnaround in his, actually.
And I think it's also interesting to look back at the beginning and see that you had the BNP, you had the party, and then you also had the magazine, the spearhead, which was, you know, both almost as important as each other. And I think we can see a parallel today with the websites that people have. And that's just as important as the party itself. Only nowadays, a lot of the time, we tend to just have websites. Or YouTube channels. It's as if the magazine has evolved,
Sven.
The magazine has evolved into something else.
Yeah. I mean, it's like with the internet. You know, I'm quite anti-Facebook, but that's for other reasons. But yeah, the fact that if used correctly, the internet is one of the most powerful weapons we've had at our disposal, because all of a sudden people go anywhere they want on the net and read what would be classified as the most racist articles of the one, or the most anti-Semitic articles. I'm not saying I'd go looking for them, but in the past, they would have been just, they'd have had to go to some bookshop in the middle of London or something, possibly get a copy. They're downloadable now. So actually, the internet's apart from Britain, white nationalism is on the rise all over Europe and America. So if Britain gets its act together, there's no reason why we shouldn't move forward as a white nationalist as well. But the internet's a fantastic thing, if used correctly. Abuse of the internet can then be a very bad thing.
Well, what about John Tyndall's book? Because he wrote a book as well, didn't he? The 11th Hour. When did that come about?
Well, he started writing the 11th Hour, which is a semi-autobiographical. It's available, by the way, if anybody wants a copy. If they go into Historical Review Press website, they can buy a copy of The 11th Hour on there. But John started writing that, his sort of his life story, plus putting down a lot of his beliefs. He started writing them when he was in prison in the mid-90s for a race act thing. It wasn't for a thing that was inspired. We also had a paper that came out every month, a broadsheet called British Nationalist, and some articles in there. Anyway, as a result of that, he ended up in prison. And while he were in there, he didn't waste his time. He started writing The 11th Hour, and it's actually a very good book. I mean, it's you get to know a lot about the things we're talking about, you know, nationalist history, for instance, as he goes back over those sort of things. I highly recommend. Have you not read that book, by the way?
I haven't read it. I've heard it serialized. Paul Hickman did a serialization of it, radio series, which I heard. I haven't actually read the book itself. So when did the book come out? After the BNP had formed?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, John came out of prison in the... he got about 12 months for a nonsense charge, as usual, but... And John came out and he finished the book. I think, I could be wrong on this, but I think about 1996, 97, maybe a bit later. Certainly before he left as chairman, he was expelled. The book was published in the 1990s, definitely. And as I say, I've always got a copy to refer back to. But it's a brilliant guide to proper white nationalism from a British point of view. And plus a lot of interesting sort of anecdotes and things as well about nationalist history.
I read the book on Colin Jordan. I've read the book on Colin Jordan, Steve Frost's book on Colin Jordan. I mean, that's really good. And it was Colin Jordan and John Tyndall were the two real driving forces behind British nationalism, weren't they, from the 60s onwards, really? Both working together.
There's a mistake the NF made in 67 when we were formed, not letting Colin Jordan join because he went off to form the British movement. But, you know, we were saying that if there was going to be unity talks, you can't keep people out of it. But there were people who thought Colin Jordan had just gone a bit too far as a National Socialist. And he was frozen out of the NF. And, you know, the poor guy's passed on now. But he was a very nice bloke and he'd have been a great asset to the NF, would Colin.
So they didn't even give him a year's probation like they did to John Tyndall?
No, they didn't even offer him, Colin, that. It was just no way you're going to ever join. which hurt him deeply, as you can imagine. So a lot of his colleagues from the past, John Bean and all these people, were in the NF, and Colin was out there on a limb, basically. That's a very sad thing that happened to him. But it didn't deter Colin. He kept publishing and writing. And as I say, he lived to a good old age as well.
It's the same story over and over again, isn't it? I mean, you can look back there and you've got all these different parties, different ideologies, or we can't have you, you're far too further to the right, you know, we can't possibly have you in there. And you've got people that, you know, very intelligent people with great ideas, like Colin Jordan. I mean, some of the stunts that he pulled, they got so much publicity, and yet he was off doing his thing with British Movement, and the National Front are off doing their thing with National Front, and then you've got the BNP that come along later on, and you know, the BNP.
And then the NF split into the flag group and the third positionists. And yeah, I mean, I've seen split after the long time I've been in, I've seen so many splits. And it is very disheartening. But what we need to do is what the Americans have done, found this nationalist front or something in America.
That's fallen apart now, really. That's fallen apart. I mean, what you've got, you've got the alt-right movement over there, which is lots of disparate groups. But again, you've got a movement that's taking place over here now. You've got this Free Tommy movement, which includes everyone. I mean, it's not just civic nationalists. It's all white nationalists as well. I mean, he's become like a totem or like a focal point for things. I mean, we may see something coming from that. And we are seeing For Britain working with UKIP. I don't know what Britain First will do once they come out of prison. Maybe they'll start working with them as well. Paul Weston has folded in Liberty GB and said he's thrown his lot in with For Britain. And if we see something like that, I think, you know, we should support it. I mean, just because so is Morrissey. I mean, just because they don't support all of our platforms doesn't doesn't mean we should be seeing them as an enemy.
Oh, I totally agree. If you try and be a purist, what you believe in is what you believe in, your interpretation of British nationalism. And I think me and yourself are white nationalists to the core, but I believe in building bridges. I've seen so many movements wrecked by egotism or falling out of a petty faction fighting and over policy. Usually it isn't about policy. It's usually personalities and egos that cause splits after splits. But yeah, it's time for all white nationalists, all British nationalists really, to build bridges and not barriers, which I wrote an article about that last year, which was quite widely disseminated. But that'd be my message. Yeah, start shaking hands, not shaking fists.
Definitely. We should be taking a leaf out of the civic nationalist book, looking at For Britain and Gerard Batten and Paul Weston and them all working together. You know, we just got to stop them from attacking us. You know, that's the big issue that most people have problems with. You know, they say, oh, well, Tommy Robinson spoke badly about Charlottesville, so I'm not going to support him. Well, that, you know, that's daft. So somebody has to be the bigger man. And put the greater good before, you know, personal rivalries. Again, that's the egotism thing. That's a personal thing. Yeah. Anyway, we're going a little bit over time here.
Okay,
Eddie.
Sorry.
So I'll say thank you very much for coming on, and hopefully you'll be back next week for more next Wednesday.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.